You know what that music means? We'll talk a little baseball here on Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe. Willie D will be with us here shortly. Let's bring up former big leaguer, and his work can be found on MLB Network. He does a great job there. I know he does stuff on XM Satellite Radio. Billy Ripken is on the line with us. Billy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys today?
We're doing fantastic. You're talking to a show that loves baseball, and so we thought you'd be a great fit to come on and talk about your book and just talk a little baseball, because it's been fun watching the baseball community in this market grow to where it is today, and obviously all the success that Tim Corbin has had at Vanderbilt, plucking out talent right here in our own city and in the state, and to all the big leaguers that are coming out of here, and some of them even just moving here while they're playing, or they hang it up. They just moved to Nashville, so that's been a lot of fun to see. Kind of tell us what went into your book, State of Play, and tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I believe that over the past few years, there's been an awful lot of conversation that's been swirling around this new school and new metrics and all the information that's going into the baseball. And I just got this sense that people have forgotten or were never informed in the first place that old school baseball guys like me have always used numbers, have always used information to come up with a plan to go out there and play. So the State of Play, the old school guide to new school baseball, is just kind of a first and foremost, that is real. We just don't go out there with gut instinct and fly by the seat of our pants and play the way it seems to be assumed. So some of these new metrics or new measurements that are being thrown into the game, I discuss, maybe aren't so new. There may be the fact that we can measure something or we name something a thing, becomes a thing, and we pretend it's new. But baseball has been around a long time. It's very cyclical. But old school guys like me, we've always used numbers and information.
What's the right balance, Billy? I think you need to obviously know numbers. You need to know trends. You need to know things that you're facing. In fact, I talked about this yesterday. I watched a fascinating piece on Real Sports, their latest episode, and it's on Trevor Bauer and just, you know, how much of a nerd he is, and talking about, you know, physics and everything and the ball and the rotation and all that good stuff. But so you got to have a feel, you got to have numbers, but you need both, right? So what is the right balance? I don't think you should be all about analytics, and I don't think it should all be about your gut feel and what you've known your whole life. So what's the right balance of both?
Well, I don't put analytics on the opposite side of old school, number one. So there can be a balance, certainly. But, you know, what Bauer's talking about and all these physics of baseball and everything else, look, Jim Palmer used to throw 300 innings a year. So it's rough for me to actually think that pitchers or all athletes are bigger, stronger, and faster than they were before. In most cases, you can look at it and say yes. But if the pitchers truly are that, why can't somebody throw 300 innings? Instead, they throw 200 and there's a party thrown over the fact they do it. But going back to physics, James Alvin Palmer used to throw high fastballs. And we used to say in the old days, okay, it had late life, it had an extra gear, it had some giddy up. Now, we couldn't quantify what the spin rate was because technology wasn't there. But you know how James Alvin Palmer knew he could throw high fastballs? Because hitters swung and missed it. So the old adage of the hitter will let you know certainly comes into play. Now, I'm not saying there's not room and thought process into all these things with physics and spin rates that are now entering into the game. But the idea is strike one still the best pitch in baseball. And I think in a lot of ways, we cloud so many numbers and so many concepts into this new game now that we forget about some of the most basic things that have to happen in order for one to have success.
Billy Ripken is on the line with us. State of Play is the book, the old school guide to new school baseball. You played during the steroid era, and now we've got this new era of cheating and, filming and all the stuff that's been going on with the Astros and everything. I just want to know for you, who's a baseball guy through and through, your family, baseball family through and through, when things like this happen to Major League Baseball and that becomes the discussion piece, I always wonder what do people like you think of where we are today and what was it like also, Billy, playing back in the steroid era when you did?
Well, I think first and foremost, things always have a way to, you know, the knee-jerk reaction hits us hard right away, and then we figure out ways to combat that. We go through different things. So the steroid era certainly was involved. The testing has become more and more stringent. In fact, I think as far as team sports go, baseball is the toughest testing that's out there. This thing here with sign-stealing gate, I would go back and say in the day, we used to play against a team, and you would sit there and try to study the team that you were playing on the field. And I equate that to almost like a poker player looking for another poker player's tells. If they're willing to give you something, you're foolish not to use it. But in this particular case, it seemed like the Oakland A's went into an Old West saloon and hung a mirror behind the guy that they were playing poker with and tried to just straight out look at their cards instead of understanding, you know, the competition that would go on and some of those nuances. So they definitely went above and beyond, but I do believe that baseball will move forward. We still have the Boston Red Sox investigation to get through. And then I think when that happens, the ownership groups and the Players Association will get together and they will put things in place where this might not happen again. So it doesn't look good right now. I get it. But I think over the long haul, baseball will end up being better for it.
Billy, the Astros were hit with, you know, organizational fines. Obviously, the GM, the manager, they were both fired. But the players themselves, you know, there really wasn't much done. Do you think that baseball did enough to punish them, or do you think they really could because it was hard to identify exactly who was guilty and who wasn't?
I think there's everything involved that you just talked about. One, we have to understand that the CBA is coming up at the end of this year in 2020, and baseball has enjoyed a very long, peaceful work relationship as far as the union goes. So that's one thing that had to be considered. I do believe that the commissioner, when he sent out his directive early in 2017, basically said if this stuff was moving forward, the manager and the general manager were going to get the smackdown. And he did exactly that. I don't know if the players necessarily could have been gone after because, okay, he got the trash can banged 20 times. He got the trash can banged 8 times. You know, what's your suspension there? I will say this. The Astros organization, they took a beat down on this. And the individual players, whether they got punished or not, their reputations took a big, big hit. They're going to have to go through something as far as a form of punishment, which is the court of public opinion. When one Astro gets out of the gate 0-for-15 to start the season, people are going to say, well, they don't know what's coming. They can't hit. And if one Astro gets out of the gate 10-for-15, somebody's going to say, well, they found new ways to cheat. So they're going to wear it for quite some time, and the 2017 Houston Astros World Championship will always be talked about as tainted, and some of the individual players' years will be talked about as tainted as well.
I always said when all of this went down and they fired A.J. Hinch that, you know, the first call they should make should be to somebody like Dusty Baker, and that's what they ended up doing. They hired Dusty Baker to come in and be the manager of that team. Why do you think he is the perfect guy to go in there and be the one to try and right the ship, so to speak?
Well, first and foremost, I think he's going to bring a sense of normalcy to a much-needed organization because there's been rumors all the way up and down through that front office that the culture was bad, and Dusty is not one of those guys to play the bad culture game. The other side of that, I've answered as many questions about what do I think about Dusty being an old-school manager coming into an analytic conversation, and I think you already know my answer to that. Dusty Baker has always been an analytical guy. He uses information at hand to apply to his baseball craft. Now, what Dusty will be old-school with is if you give him some new-school information that he doesn't quite like and he doesn't think it works, he will tell you in no uncertain terms, don't bring that stuff down here to me. That doesn't work. Then it's viewed as us, Dusty being an old school curmudgeon that is unwilling and unable to conform to new school of thinking. But Dusty Baker has something that nobody from the new school necessarily has, and that's years and years and years of experience. And all the way through those years, if you talk to Dusty Baker, you will understand that he analyzes things as he goes on. Now, he might not know all the nuggets that are out there and the way they're termed nowadays as far as some of the new school thinking, But Dusty is very much an analytical guy when it comes to baseball.
You know, part of the fun of baseball over the years is sometimes, you know, it's a pitcher's game, and then you'll see the hitters, you know, really come through, and it becomes a hitter's game. And, you know, as of late, we talk a lot about launch angle and things like that. And your book, you know, is about the new school and the old school and bringing them all together and things like that. When you look at hitters today, how much of a change have you seen from back when you played to some of the things, the techniques that they use now?
I really don't think there's any. To tell you the truth, I think if you watch the game, it looks the same. If you listen to the game, it's completely different. So launch angle, for example, is nothing more than the ball coming off the bat. That's it. It's not the swing. It's the ball coming off the bat. So what has been misinterpreted and misused, I think, in some broadcasts and studio shows is we almost make the implication that it has something to do with an uppercut swing. I've also heard terminologies like that person worked really hard on improving his launch angle. Well, what does that mean? Does it go up or does it go down? Because Christian Yelich won an MVP in the National League in 2018 with an average year-long launch angle of 4.7, hit 36 homers. Mookie Betts won the American League MVP with an average launch angle over the year of 2018 of 18.4 and had 32 homers. So the guy at four more homers had the lower launch angle. So my point is with the launch angle, there's too many different body types. There's too many different swings in the game to try to come up with this optimum type thing. So to say somebody improved his launch angle is a completely misleading statement and made by itself really has no merit. So Babe Ruth had a launch angle. Hank Aaron had a launch angle. These things are real because it's nothing more than a ball coming off the bat. Every 10-year-old that plays baseball in America or the world has a launch angle, but we confuse that with the swing, and that's just misleading.
Billy, let's end with this. Baltimore Orioles, what is it going to take for them to get back? This is some down times for the O's.
It is down times, but when things change, the more they stay the same, I like to say. The Orioles need to do what every team that's done over the past 50 years that has gone to the World Series, they have to draft well. And last year they picked Atlee Rutschman, the 1-1. This next June coming up, I believe the Tigers have the 1-1 and the Orioles will have the second pick. And for the next few years, when your upper picks have to hit moving forward. So every team that's gone to the World Series and won the World Series has done it with a draft core, that guys that they could develop through their minor leagues and then you build around, and that I don't think is ever going to change. You have to draft well, you have to develop well, and you cannot miss on these picks in the next few years if you're the Orioles.
No doubt about it. Hey, we really enjoyed the visit. Thanks so much for doing this, and best of luck with the book, and we'll be watching your work on MLB Network here from Nashville. So thanks for doing this.
I appreciate you. I was down in your town in February of last year. Not this February, but a year ago. And I enjoy your town an awful lot, and I can see why all these players want to move there. And who knows, one day Nashville might even get bigger as far as baseball is concerned. Yeah?
Oh, we certainly keep our fingers crossed on that front for sure. Thank you, Billy, for doing this.
All right, guys, I appreciate your time.
All right, that is Billy Ripken. The book is State of Play, the Old School Guide to New School Baseball. Really good stuff from him. We'll continue our coverage here live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Speaking of Terry Crisp will join us on site in the second hour of the program.
He's feisty today. I've already seen him.
About an hour from now. Well, good. We like feisty on this show. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next.